Okay. So we're a few days before Hanukkah, and started a few weeks ago preparing for Hanukkah Shirim, and here we are just a few days before, and that means it's time to make sure we don't overlook the essence of what the holiday is about. It's a very interesting holiday because there's no Isser Melacha, which means you're essentially going about your regular day. Now, there is another holiday on this caliber that is like this, which is Purim. Except Purim is a highly unusual day where you have no choice, really, but to be consumed by the different things you have to be doing. And that's if you're sober, right? If you're sober on that day, you're running around, you're going to people's houses, you're staying, making sure you're staying at home so other people are coming over, you're making sure you're doing the mitzvah of Matanas Levyonim on the actual day, you're preparing for a seuda, you're having a seuda, you have to do it before the day actually ends. This is a day where even if you're, you know, technically allowed to turn the lights on and off, the day is completely filled up by the content of the holiday. You could technically get through Hanukkah and spend around 11 total minutes on the actual holiday. If you didn't have the time for it, you could still do the mitzvah perfectly. You light the candle, it's done. We're talking about seconds a day. And if you look at the actual halacha, the mitzvah is to put on the outside of your house, mi petach habayis, mi bachutz, which means even after it's lit, assuming you're going inside for the night, you're not even seeing it. Now think about how much of an impact that has on a day-to-day life. Now I'm not saying that Hanukkah is a drag now, but it's an interesting thing to understand, okay, this has a very unique flavor to it. There's something different about this, and we need to understand why. And what exactly is causing it to be this way, where it's kind of more ordinary, where we're not necessarily taking any giant steps out of our routine. The answer in my mind really revolves around the name of the holiday. I'm fascinated by the names of every holiday. I find that there is such amazing depth that is found in the name, that there's so much that commentaries dwell on when it comes to the name of a holiday. There are layers, there are sometimes where the name points to a very minute detail in the story or in you know, the event, and yet it's our job to understand why that's not such a minute detail, but really a major part of it. Hanukkah, I think, has become so commercialized in our culture, even in the non-Jewish culture, that we kind of don't even think about what the word means. We kind of just think Hanukkah, oh, lights and Maccabees and stuff like that, right? That's essentially what we're thinking of. And to the point where we don't even ask ourselves, what does this word mean? If you would ask the average person, what does the word Hanukkah mean? They probably would say festival of light. Right? Or they would say lighting the menorah or something like that. But it doesn't mean that. The word doesn't mean that. There are others, if maybe you went to Yeshiva Day School and you heard the famous way of splitting the word into two. So then, oh, Hanukkah means? Anyone know what I'm talking about?
Hanukkah.
Hanukkah, that they fought this war and that they rested from battle on the 25th of Kislev. And that's why we call it Hanukkah. But that's only after we know that the name is called Hanukkah, then you could find that interesting way of making that name. But that's not why they put those two words together, Hanukkah, and then made the name Hanukkah. That's only a cute thing after the fact. But why is this? Why did the Rabbanim who established this holiday, why did they choose this name, and what is it meant to represent? So what does the word mean, actually mean? Who knows?
Dedication.
How do we know that this word means a dedication? We see it in the Torah, in Chumash, we see it in, maybe even more famously, because it's said every day, in Tehillim, Mizmor Shir, Chanukat HaBayit, a little bit, right? When we talk about Chanukat HaBayit, we're talking about dedicating the Beit HaMikdash. And what dedicating means is the grand opening, right? We're commemorating the day where we begin to put it into use, where it goes from being a project or a dream or a thought into, okay, now it's a part of life. Now it's going to be an active part of my life. And it's very special to see that transition happen. So what the heck does that have to do with Chanukah? Now the answer is somewhat simple if you consider the history of the event. The holiday of Chanukah was established mainly because of the war, actually. If you look at the Al-Hanisim, I believe, it's one of the also a fascinating point. Al-Hanisim we say every day. It's probably the thing we spend more time on because it's so long than the actual Hadlakas Neros or anything else, right? And it's just like a tad too long to remember by heart, so you have to actually find your place in the Siddur. And it's invention, it's interrupting, so right, it's interrupting your day in a significant way. Now, we say Al HaNisim V'Al HaPurgan on the miracles by Yomim HaHem HaZman HaZeh, and then, of course, Al HaNisim tells the story, right? Just like on Purim, well, there Al HaNisim tells the story. And what does it say in the story? It says the Greeks contaminated the Mikdash, and we fought back, and Hashem delivered us a victory, Rabim Biyad Ma'atim, right? We were very few, the many were in the hands of the few. Tameim Biyad Sa'orim, Rashaim Biyad Sadikim, Rekabishmonis Tamei Chanukah, Elu Lehotas La'alel. And somewhere in there it says, V'hidliku Neiros V'chatzos Kadshecha. It's like in an afterthought, like, oh, they also lit the menorah. But the whole story was around this war. And what I love to talk about when it comes to Chanukah is, this is one of the only times where we commemorate a war that we started. We started this war. The Greeks were not fighting against us, they were persecuting us. There was religious discrimination, there were decrees against our religious freedoms. There was even violent consequences when we broke those laws. That was not a good way to live. But there was by no means a war. The Beis HaMikdash was not functioning, at least not nearly the way, close to the way it should, and it resulted in a breaking point for a small group of people who decided to wage war against the Greeks, and in a miraculous way, hard to even put into words, it sounds silly, because they were a family of people and they waged war against the Greeks. I'm not exaggerating. It's as if like you and your siblings and your cousins are like, okay, let's go take on Turkey, right? Like that's what that was like. And they were victorious. At that point, the reason why they fought the war was in order to gain back their religious freedom. And the first thing that they did once they gained back their religious freedom was they rededicated the Beis HaMikdash. They said, we are now allowed to use this Beis HaMikdash the way we always wanted, the way it is meant to be used. And this holiday was really focused on fighting in order to get back our ability to serve God the way we wanted. That is the essence of the holiday. And I don't mean the fact that we fought. I don't mean just the fact that we could do it again. But it's really there's a three-part series. We initiated a battle in order to gain back our religious freedom. God delivered us a victory that was very clearly supernatural, even if it didn't break any rules of nature, it didn't make any sense militarily speaking, and as a result of the victory, we rededicated ourselves specifically by resuming the regular service in the Beis HaMikdash, just so that we're all up to speed. But the word Chanukah, like we said, actually comes from the first time there was a dedication of a Mikdash. Because that word wasn't created for this event of Chanukah. This word was borrowed from a previous time where there was a dedication. specifically the dedication of the Mishkan in the desert. And there's a very famous and very interesting Medrash that discusses one small part of this dedication ceremony. Some of you may remember it, the longest parsha in the Torah, in Chumash, is?
Neso.
Parsha's Neso, which is how many psukim do you remember? 176 psukim. Now it's kind of smoke and mirrors because a lot of the psukim are exactly the same. And that is because the parsha goes into a very long detail discussing the different gifts that each tribal prince, each nasi, the representative of each tribe, gave during the ceremony of the dedication of the Mishkan. And it happened to be that each one gave the exact same gift to the Mishkan, but it goes into detail for every single one, right? There's a medrash at the beginning of this story. Baha'aloscha, this is the parsha right after Naso. This is in the same sequence of events of the dedication of the Mishkan. Hashem commands Aharon to light the candles of the menorah. Baha'aloscha, esamnorah, molpnei haneros, right? I'm sorry, molpnei haneros, tayur shivat haneros. The Medrash says as follows, Kishera'a Aharon HaKohen Chanukas HaNasiim Chalsha Daito Shalohaya Imahim Bechanaka. When Aharon HaKohen saw the gifts that the Nasiim were giving at the dedication ceremony of the Mishkan, he became depressed that he didn't have something to give, that he wasn't included in this ceremony. Lohu velo shivto, the entire Shevet Levi was not included in this. Amar Leah Kadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem said back to him, Chayecha Shelcha Gedola Mishalehem. Trust me, what you have, the unique position that you're in, is much greater than the position that they're in, the ones that are giving the gifts. Why? Hashem explains, She'ata Madlik Umeitiv Et Hanerot. Because you are the one that's going to light and set up the Nerot, the menorah in the Mishkan. Which is a very strange thing, because why does that necessarily mean that it's better? Now obviously if you think about it on a very basic level, it means they're just giving gifts about the Mishkan, right? Because of the Mishkan. He gets to walk in and do the service, and I understand that. But the Ramban explains, one second, Ramban explains that this entire episode is a hint to Chanukah. That there is avoda in the base of Mikdash, and Aharon gets upset, he gets kind of depressed that he's not a part of that, a part of the dedication ceremony, and Hashem comforts him by saying, you'll light the candles. And the Ramban proves that this is kind of a hint to Chanukah, because he quotes a different medrash that says the following, Amar Leah Kadosh Baruch Hu HaKarbanos Kol Zman Sha'abes HaMikdash Kayam Heim Nohagim. Right, when it comes to Karbanos, those were the gifts that the Nasim gave, they were Karbanos. And any subsequent Karban, they are only relevant when the Beis HaMikdash is standing. Aval HaNeros, but the menorah, in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Mishkan, Le'olam El Mol Pnei HaMenorah Ya'iru. They will forever be illuminated, be lit in front of the menorah or on the menorah. The Einav Batalin La'olam, and they will never ever go out. They will never be void, they will never be irrelevant. The Ramban points out, well, that's simply not true. When you destroy the Beis HaMikdash, when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the menorah also was not in use anymore. So how could this Medrash claim that When the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, the Karbanos aren't necessarily going to be given anymore, but the menorah is still going to be used? That's not true. And Ramban uses that measure to point out the only thing that could be referring to is the fact that in later generations, the Hanukkah menorah during this holiday will continue to be lit every single year, and the concept of lighting the menorah will never go away. So we see that this idea of the military victory of the Chashmonaim on Hanukkah is intimately connected and even hinted to in the Torah itself, when Aaron was given the responsibility of lighting the menorah and Hashem promised him, this will never go away. And the way that we're able to continue this service of lighting the menorah on the Beis HaMikdash is through the holiday of Hanukkah. But that means that there's some sort of connection here, not just in terms of the physical activity of lighting, but what's the message of Aaron being depressed at a dedication ceremony and us being able to kind of fulfill the promise of God to him, saying, don't worry, what you're doing will never go away, right? And that's kind of like it, the way God comforted him is through the fact that he knew that we in 2016 would be able to light menorah as well. And I think the answer, once again, goes back to the word Chanukah. When we talk about the original dedication, it was a very interesting, I would say, in a sense, emotionally tense situation. What do I mean by that? It could be I'm describing it wrong. But if you remember, sometime before the Mishkan was commanded and built, there was a very big mistake that the Jewish people made. And that was the Chet HaEgel. It was an event that literally altered history, according to many commentaries, but certainly was a great big stain in this perfect storyline that was going out. It just shattered this momentum, this amazingly fast and glorious momentum that the Jewish people had going right out of Mitzrayim, going up to Har Sinai, going into Eretz Israel, and it just stopped right there. It was embarrassing. It was shameful. It was painful. To the extent that some commentaries say the Jewish people thought that that was it. They thought that there was no more destiny for them. Like, they messed up, and there's no moving on from here. Because it wasn't understood that you could mess up that badly and continue on. Probably the assumption was the opposite. What was the way that God made sure that the Jewish people understood that they could move forward from here? The Mishkan. It was the ultimate form of, I'm still here. Not only am I here, but I'm with you. I'm going to live among you. Part of the issue with the Chet HaEgel was that God was up there and Moshe was up there and they felt all alone, and it led to this disaster of a situation. And God saying, not only are we still good, but I'm going to live closer to you than I was even before. So when we talk about the dedication of the Mishkan, like we said in the beginning, it's this event where we go from a dream or an idea to a reality. But in this specific case, in terms of the Mishkan, and I would say different than the Beis HaMikdash, because this had a different circumstance surrounding it, this represented something much more than just the building. This represented, even when we were down, even when we messed up, if we rededicate ourselves, if we work back, you know, fix what was broken, and try and move on, we can get to this place of the Mishkan, where we could serve God in the most amazing possible way. So in a sense, if you think about it, the dedication of the Mishkan was really a rededication of themselves, because it was a mending of the broken relationship between them and God. It could be, I'm just thinking about this right now, It could be that's why Aharon was in a very emotionally fragile place when it came to this event. Because Aharon was in a very tough situation when it came to the Chet HaEgel. Perhaps he felt somewhat responsible. He was the one that kind of tried to stall them and then ended up sort of guiding them towards this idea unintentionally. But it's hard to ignore the fact that Aharon must have been carrying this guilt of how did I let this happen to my people. And it could be that the dedication ceremony of the Mishkan was a much more significant event in his eyes than perhaps anyone else. Because for him, this meant, okay, even I can move forward. This can show me that even as a leader, I can go back to the place where I want it to be. And maybe that's why he wanted to have such a big part in the dedication of this building, of this event, that it was hard for him to take a step back, to be kind of in the second row, as opposed to on stage. But what God's response was to him, was, no, your role is a much bigger role than simply this Mishkan and simply you in this event. Your role is for the people, for the Jewish people, for the rest of time, to learn from your lesson and to say, you could be in the darkest of the dark, you could be the lowest of the low, and you could still light a candle and you could still rededicate yourself and go back to the place that you were. So the word Chanukah really means dedication. But if we see that the source of the word comes from an event that was essentially a rededication of the Jewish people, and if you go back to the story of Chanukah, or forward, you realize that story was also a rededication. Because we're talking about a Beis HaMikdash that was working, was functioning, and then it stopped functioning, and this event symbolized a restarting of the functioning of the Beis HaMikdash. So really the name of this holiday is rededication. Rededicating ourselves to something we are already familiar with. We already know what it means to have it, because in a sense we lost it and now we're trying to get it back. Just like Matan Torah, and we lost that level and now we're going to the Mishkan. And Beis HaMikdash, we lost it a little and now we're rededicating it. So the idea of the holiday isn't that there's this new reality, that there's something that's outside of the ordinary. It's really that we're trying to go back to what our ordinary was, what our normal was. And our normal was amazing. And it kind of fell off a cliff. And now we're trying to climb back up to what the status quo was. But that status quo doesn't mean routine and humdrum and Monday morning and whatever. It means a meaningful life, a constantly meaningful life. Perhaps that's why Chanukah is just a regular week, right? Chanukah doesn't have a day where you're running all over the place doing wild things and telling stories about how crazy that holiday was and all the cooking that we needed to do and all that. No, like we have a week and we go to school or we go to work and we take a few, you know, minutes out when the sun goes down and maybe we have like a party or two here, and it's kind of silly, the party. It's not as much of a spiritual thing. It's more like food related. And then like before you know it, it's over. Now, I'm not describing maybe the way that the original people who established this holiday had in mind necessarily. But what I mean is that it's easy to forget the significance that the spiritual infusion on this particular holiday more than anyone else, because it's meant to be a rededication of the ordinary day. It's meant to be reestablishing that our ordinary is amazing. That saying brachos in the morning, pokeach ivrim malbish arum, is an unbelievably meaningful experience to remind ourselves that it's not so simple that we are able to walk around and see and we have clothes on our back and that we have the life that we have. That's why it needs to be ordinary. I want to touch on one more aspect of within this theme to show how this idea really isn't just an isolated one revolving around the word Hanukkah, but it actually does surround the entire holiday. I want to talk about the idea of fire, of a candle, because that clearly is the focus, even though ironically, like I mentioned with Al Anisim, it's kind of just a bonus part. Because I'll talk about how the real nes that we're commemorating of Hanukkah is the victory of the war, but because it's easy to look at a military victory and say, okay, like flukes happen in wars, and we might not immediately attribute that to God. So God did a little extra nes with the flame, with the menorah lasting 8 days. It's important to understand that this nes was kind of weird. Like, there's a very easy way to view this holiday having nothing to do with the menorah at all. Like, it's completely extra. And obviously we don't think about it that way, but it is extra. It's simply the first thing they did when they went into the Mikdash and there was just cobwebs and nothing going on. And they said, oh, we need to light the menorah. They couldn't find any pure oil, except for 1 day's worth. And they lit it for 1 day and it lasted 8 days. It's a total side story. I don't even know how many people knew. I mean, I guess the word spread. But if you think about it, if you're the average person, the news of that year was the military victory. We beat the Greeks. And then there was this crazy cool thing I saw on YouTube about how the oil lasted 8 days, right? Like that was kind of cool. But the military thing was the news story of the year. It's important also to point out that it goes on an even deeper level. The Jewish people did not have to use Shemen Zach in order to light the menorah that year. There's a famous halacha called Tuma Hutra B'tzibura. If there's a mitzvah that is a community obligation, meaning it's not an individual mitzvah, but the entire people have to perform a mitzvah, and the only way that it could be performed in any given circumstance is through something that's not completely pure, it's allowed. Because for communal mitzvah, you're allowed to bend a little. Now when it comes to an avodah in the Beis HaMikdash, that's a communal mitzvah. The Jewish people are responsible for fulfilling the mitzvah of lighting the menorah. They had a bunch of impure oil. They could have used that easily, no problem. So the whole miracle was even extra, right? So the whole theme of lights and lighting, it's kind of like God forced it in there. Like God wanted to tell us, like, no, add this thing in, it's a really cool twist. But it's not a necessary component to the story. And it could be that there's something here regarding the idea of a flame, of a ner. There's lots of talk in Chazal about what a flame is. Ner Hashem Nishmat Adam. Right? There's a famous Chazal that talks about how the ner, the menorah itself, represented Chachma in the Beis HaMikdash. There are lots of different themes that we could point to. But I'm actually going to skip all of those, and I'm going to go to the chemistry. A weird angle to dwell on as a rabbi. But hear me out. What is fire? It's a chemical reaction. I'll take this one, don't worry. It's a chemical reaction. It's okay. It's a chemical reaction. It is the result of oxygen meeting some sort of fuel and an action, a spark, right? There be a combustion component of it, right? So it's when you have two things that on their own don't have anything to do with each other, don't react to each other, and then you put them together really fast. A match, the two rocks thing, right? And then you have fuel to keep it going. Scientists point out that people like to include the element of fire. Actually, the Greeks did this. They thought that the element of fire was one of the building blocks of the world, just like water and earth and air, right? But it's not true, because those things are actual matter. They're actual elements. Fire is simply a chemical reaction. It's not a thing. It's just an explosion of things. Right? Fire was discovered by Anupama Rishon after the world was created. It wasn't a building block of creation, right? If you think about that idea, and try to apply it to what we're saying now, is we're saying that fire isn't the creation of something new. It is taking what's already there, shaking it up a bit, or hitting it together really fast, and it creates heat and light. And it creates a chemical reaction that's similar to an explosion. On a psychological level, I would equate this to our emotions. And I'm not the first one to do this. We think of someone who has fire, right? Who's on fire. They're passionate, right? A fiery personality, passionate. Now, what is an emotion? Now, think about this. It's not an activity. It's not a thought. It's simply how it colors how we think and how we behave. It changes something that we're doing, not quantitatively, but qualitatively, how we're doing something. Which means it's not a thing on its own. Happiness is not a thing, it's a feeling. If I act in a way that I show more happiness, so then my emotions are informing my actions, how to behave differently. It's as if I gave, it's as if I lit my actions on fire. Do you see the connection? The idea of Hanukkah being a rededication of something we already know, something we already are familiar with, something we already have, as opposed to a holiday like Pesach, where we were avadim, we didn't have freedom, and we went to a place where we have freedom. Here we had a Beis Hamikdash, here we had a connection to Hashem, we kind of lost our way, and now we're getting it back. The process of how to go about doing that, how do I get back to being excited about something that I'm not excited about, right? How do I get back to loving something that I don't love anymore? We could you know, talk about relationships very easily in this context. The answer is light the menorah. Look at a chemical reaction. It's two things that are boring and silent and do their own thing. And what you have to do is you have to put some force into it, put some energy into it, and you will create a chemical reaction that will produce light, that will produce heat, that will produce passion. The question of how do I celebrate Hanukkah is answered with the menorah. The answer is, take what you have and light it on fire. I don't want you to walk away from this shiur saying, my rabbi told me to light things on fire. I mean, on an emotional level, to look differently, a little differently, at the things that you are already familiar with, and even too familiar with, and say, how do I do this with passion? How do I rededicate myself to it? And there's so many things in our lives, because we have a routine, because we go through things that become difficult, that become drawn out. And most importantly, when we're talking about having a relationship with God that's day in, day out, morning, afternoon, and night, and we have obligations to Him, such as prayer and mitzvos and things that are constants, right? So passion is a complete foundation of what we're doing, because without it, we have nothing. So Hanukkah could seem like the most regular of holidays, and yet, if you think about it, if we don't truly understand and appreciate Hanukkah, then what do the other holidays do for us, really? Because we can have a great Pesach, then we go back to our routine and say, "Whoa." And in fact, it's the holidays that actually give us that feeling, because if you ever go back to school or to work the day after a vacation, you don't want to be anywhere near there, right? So ironically, the holiday produces a feeling of, I don't like the everyday. I don't feel connected to this regular existence. I like the extraordinary. My theory, by the way, about Chetah Egel is that the Jewish people, because their relationship to God existed only through miracles and only through supernatural, up until that point, it was God is nowhere. Then God showed up and there were fiery ice balls falling from the sky, and that was the most amazing thing they ever saw, and somehow it never hit any of them, and they were miraculously saved, and the greatest nation of history up until that point was destroyed up until the very last one in the most amazing event ever recorded, and they walk through a sea to top it all off, and then they get to the mountain and then their mind is blown, and I mean that literally, several times, and they're seeing things and hearing things, and it's the trippiest, craziest thing that they've ever experienced, and the God's like, I'll see you in 40 days, and Moshe, right? And then what happens right at that moment, you just hear like birds chirping, and it's just like the day, and what do I do? What do I do now? What's my role? How do I go from literally every day is the most mind-blowing thing I've ever seen to, okay, now I have to like make breakfast? Like, what? Like, what should we talk about? You know? And I think after 40 days of that, yes, there was this panic of Moshe not coming back, but I think they weren't quite sure how to exist in a normal day. And what they had to do was produce something supernatural and crazy and amazing. So they threw a bunch of shiny things into a fire. Don't take the fire part of this too lightly. And something moving, crazy, shiny. Oh, that's the God I remember. That's the spiritual experience I remember. And they felt at home again, ironically. And then God came down and said, you idiots. I'm here every single day. I'm around you all the time. You don't need a holiday to experience me. The holiday is just something special. It's like a birthday party. But if you live with your parents, so then the birthday party is kind of just a bonus. And I couldn't understand that. And by the way, that syndrome, that issue, what happened when the Jews got to Eretz Yisrael? They looked around and said, no good, not for me. What's one of the reasons? Because when we go to Eretz Yisrael, we have to like go to work. We have to like dig holes in the ground and plant stuff. And we have to like build houses and live normal life. I don't know what normal is. Not only do I not know what normal is, I already know that I don't want normal, because I would like to live in a way where food falls from the sky and I eat it. It tastes like whatever I want. And there are clouds around me that protect me from every bad thing that could happen. And whenever I need something, I just ask God, and he's like literally right there. Why do I want this existence again, where I have to pray for rain to come down so that I could eat tomorrow? If you think about it, they had a good point. It's just God had no intention of them living in a state of miracles all the time. Hanukkah is the idea of every day can be extremely special. Every day could be extremely meaningful, and the holidays are a bonus. The holiday shouldn't be reminding me about how ordinary and how, you know, just regular our lives are. But they remind us about how God is here every single day. And how if we ignite our passion, we can find the specialness of every single day. It's hard to do that with everything that we're doing every day. I think if we were to try and do Hanukkah correctly, and I guess I mean correctly by saying actually reignite our passion for the things that we take for granted and that we're used to every day, I would say to start with something small and something typical.
Oh, you guys are 50 minutes early.
Something small and something practical. Whether that's one of the davenings of the day, say, let me just take one more minute. Whether that's one paragraph of one davening of the day. I always give advice to people who ask me, who struggle with davening, I say, just the paragraph of Modim. Just start with that. Just think about the words of Modim. It will kind of change your life if you dedicate yourself to going through that paragraph each day with real concentration. I don't usually make guarantees like that, but I'm willing to for this. I would even say one extra parak of Tehillim, not for a sick person, just because you want to read a tefillah, you want to read a piece of Torah. Anything like that. Really anything. I mean, davening is an easy one because it's a constant. There are ways of dedicating yourself in terms of learning Torah, in terms of doing an act of chesed that you don't have to do, looking for a way to do chesed. There are many different examples of this, and I think we each know our schedules and our who the things we are connected to and the ideas that we could come up with in our own lives that I don't want to try and guess. But if we're going to do Hanukkah successfully, it doesn't just mean that we're going to say El Anisim and that we're going to eat some unhealthy food and that we're going to light the menorah a bunch of times over and over again, and then we're going to go back to work. Right? That would kind of be hypocritical of the whole message of Hanukkah, which is us rededicating ourselves. And hopefully, as Chazal says, that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed with fire, so too the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt with fire. So yeah, literally the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed with fire, but perhaps the Beis HaMikdash that we're still waiting to rebuild, the fire that it will need in order to rebuild it, may be referring to our inner flame, to our passion. And that's the fire that is necessary to build the Beis HaMikdash. And that's certainly that process of reminding ourselves that there's this big burning flame inside of us, waiting to have that chemical reaction. This is the time to strive towards that, towards making that chemical reaction in our souls happen. And hopefully we will be successful in doing that this Hanukkah. Everyone should have a happy Hanukkah, Chag Sameach, and hopefully we'll light some things on fire this year. Tov. So.